This audio download is from the 2009 Dublin Anarchist Book Fair. It's from the session on the capitalist crisis, fighting back, and features a member of the CPSU executive, a member of FEE, the Students Anti-Fees Campaign, and a member of the INTO. You can download more audio from www.wsm.ie.
Hi everybody, welcome. Thanks for coming to the Anarchist Book Fair. And this meeting is on organising a fight back. We have three speakers today, as you can see. First up is going to be Gregor Kerr, who's a member of the Workers' Solidarity Movement, who organised the book fair. Second is Dennis Keane, who's an executive member of the Civil and Public Service here. And third is Julian Brophy, who's involved in the Free Education for Everyone campaign in UCD. And each speaker is going to speak for about 10 minutes, and then we're going to have half an hour for questions and comments at the end. And just to let you know, we had hoped to have somebody from the Waterford Crystal Workers here today, but unfortunately, you probably know they've been in occupation of the factory for about 5 weeks now in defence of their jobs. They're having a meeting today of shop stewards in preparation for a meeting of all the workers tomorrow to discuss the purchase of the company, so they weren't able to make it here today. And just to remind you as well, a lot of you probably have this, our meeting on Tuesday, follow-up to this meeting about organising the fight back. It's going to be in the Teachers Club on Parnell Square at 7:30 on Tuesday night. If anyone can make it, that would be great. So, Gregor is first up.
Okay, now, sort of feel very disconnected from everybody who's sitting up here now, but I suppose that I also feel that you're after listening to a very inspirational speaker, so challenge has been set in terms of maintaining that sort of standard. But, first of all, I suppose I'd say it's no surprise that to anybody in this room, I'd say that yet again, capitalism has gone from boom to bust. Capitalism has always been inherently unstable, and as sure as night follows day, bust follows boom. And neither, I suppose, is it any surprise to anyone here that the government has responded by... that's still working? Okay. The government has responded to the crisis by trying to pin all of the blame on the shoulders of workers and the poorer sections of society. We all have to share the pain is the mantra that we can hear, which is repeated by everybody from Brian Lenihan to Eamon Gilmore to David Begg and other trade union leaders. Mind you, during the years of the boom, we didn't hear too many of them saying we all have to share the wealth. Sean Quinn, the owner of Quinn Insurance, among other companies, for example, was recently interviewed on radio, and he admitted that his family had lost €1 billion in Anglo-Irish Bank, but went on then to say that they could absorb that because the companies continued to make enough money annually but not with any major effect. Yet money is now being taken out of our pockets to refinance the banks. It's a weird sort of sharing that these guys are into. And just to put that into context, Quinn's companies make approximately €500 million in profits every year, which is the equivalent of the income of 15,625 people on the average industrial wage. So when they talk about, you know, where the money is going to come from, there's simple easy answers as to where it can come from. Anyway, you missed Sean Quinn being interviewed. You might have seen Brian Goggin, Bank of Ireland's chief executive, a couple of weeks ago on the news being interviewed. And poor Brian admitted that his disclosed compensation, that's what we would call take-home pay, I suppose, last year was €2.9 million. And that he would have to take a substantial reduction this year and he'd take home less than €2 million. I suppose he's not much in common with the rest of us anyway. We'd probably all be taking home a little less than €2 million this year. Again, to put the figures in context, if he was given a 98% pay cut, he'd be down on the average industrial wage. So the idea that the pain should be shared is just absolute complete nonsense. And every time we hear a trade union leader saying it, we should be challenging them on the idea that we have to share the pain. The idea that we all somehow lost the run of ourselves and lived beyond our means for the past number of years is complete crap, basically. The fact of the matter is, according to the Bank of Ireland's Wealth of the Nation report, 1% of the population owns 34% of the wealth. So, to put it very simply, the rich are the ones that cause the crisis. They're the ones that need to be made to pay for it. So the question for us is, how should we as workers, students, unemployed, respond to the crisis, and what sort of campaigns should we be trying to build, and what can we do to begin to organise a fight back against what's happening? How can we go about building a fight back that will deliver a very clear message to the politicians that we didn't cause the crisis and we're not willing to be the scapegoats for it? And more importantly, how can we build a campaign which will let the government know that we're not simply content with registering our opposition, but that we are actually determined to defeat them? And that's quite an important one, because I think a lot of the trade union leadership are of the mind that have the odd march, let people know that we're a little bit cross with the government, but they have no concept of actually how to go about organising a campaign to win, and no intention of even doing so. I think the first steps have been taken in building that fight back, and the march 2 weeks ago with something between 120,000 and 150,000 workers on the streets of Dublin registering their opposition to the public sector pay cut, which was imposed in the form of a pension levy, and to attack the workers' wages and conditions in both the public and private sector. That was followed up by a one-day strike by members of the Civil and Public Service Union. I'm sure Dennis will talk a little bit more about what's going on in CPSU. And other public sector unions, such as teacher unions and Impact, are currently in the process of balloting their members for industrial action. The result of the teachers' ballot actually came out last night. The IMTO had a 79% result overall in favour of industrial action. And I'm not sure what the result was in the other two unions other than that. They both voted for strike action. So, under pressure from below, the ICTU leadership has now called a one-day national strike for the 30th of March. And while we should always remember that the ICTU leadership are not to be trusted, after all, they have sold us the idea of social partnership for the last 20 years, and they're still convinced that we can somehow sort out this financial mess through partnership and social solidarity, as they call it. Nonetheless, it's very important for those of us interested in organising a real fight back that a huge majority of industrial action across all unions is delivered, and that day of action is delivered on the 30th of March. In relation to building for that, I think it's important for us to take stock of where things are at in terms of the ICTU, because on the 25th of February, the ICTU wrote to all affiliated unions about its campaign in support of the Congress 10-point plan for Social Solidarity Pact. And the letter states, it was decided to up the stakes somewhat. So having had 150,000 people on the streets on the Saturday, they decided to up the stakes. So if you read the first paragraph of the letter, you might think, well, up the stakes means they're going to go strike, or they're going to actually take the next step, organise a national strike. No, their idea of upping the stakes is to offer the government, to negotiate a three-year deal with the government around their 10-point plan. Complete crap, basically. So the so-called, according to them, the so-called social partnership that has brought us to this sorry mess is somehow going to rescue us from it. But we need to remember that by actually going back into talks, if we are accepting the needs for cuts, talks are about how cuts will be implemented. That's what the talks are about. And they're buying into the government strategy that it's workers who will pay for the crisis. And last Sunday on 6-1 News, Brian Cowan was going on about social partnership as the way out of the crisis. And on the same day on RT Radio, on the This Week programme, he claimed that the government is not yet considering a pay cut for the public sector, but that all options would have to be considered. 2 days previously in the Shannon, they had voted through legislation which they called fantastic title, the Financial Emergency Measures in the Public Interest Bill, which imposed a pay cut on the public sector. They called it a pension levy. But now what they say is, oh, we're actually now considering a pay cut in the public sector. We're considering increasing taxes. What's ICTA's response? We could talk about it. So the response from us must be that we maximise the yes vote for industrial action as the ballots take place across all unions. And following on from that, we need to up the stakes in a real way within the trade unions and force ICTU to actually implement that strike that they talked about on the 30th of March. And while they talk about it as a strike in favour of their 10-point plan, we can very quickly turn that around into a strike against the cuts. And that's what I think we need to do. As I said, it wouldn't surprise me in the least if ICTU, between this and the 30th of March, called off the action on plan for that day. In fact, what would surprise me is if ICTU got through with it. But what we need to do, what's very important in relation to where we're at, is to take control of that fight back ourselves within our unions. We need to be prepared to build a campaign that's digging in for the long haul. And even if that one day strike does go ahead on March 30th, it's unlikely the government is likely to back down the following day and say, God, we were wrong. So what that day needs to be is the first step in a campaign that needs to be built in every single workplace, in every single town, in every single parish throughout this country. We need a national series of strikes, protests, marches, pickets, aimed at the defence of public services and at the defence of the victims of financial crisis, whether they're private sector workers whose jobs have been savaged, public sector workers whose wages are being cut, users of public services such as education, health, whose already threadbare services are being attacked even more. All of these issues need to be put together, and we need to stand together and support each other. Huge efforts are actually being made, as people will be aware, to divide and conquer, to set public sector worker against private sector worker, for example. And soon we'll be expected to hear all about the social welfare surrounders and all the rest of the black propaganda, which will be used to set us at each other's throats instead of uniting in solidarity. The wealthy are very good at protecting each other's backs and covering up for each other. We need to build a campaign or a series of campaigns which will offer solidarity and protection to the victims of the financial crisis. That campaign, in my view, needs to be built from the grassroots up in every single area. We should not be relying on any political party or anyone else to act on our behalf. They've all shown they can't be trusted. Let's each rely on our own strengths and abilities to begin the process of building that campaign in our own workplaces and in our own areas. I would say we should forget electing politicians to defend us, forget relying on trade union leaders. Our strength lies in building a campaign that we ourselves control and own. That campaign needs to involve mass participation and needs to be built in a non-hierarchical manner, with control remaining with the ordinary members of the campaign rather than being hived off to some committee of leaders. It's from building such a campaign and employing tactics that directly involve each of us, strikes, pickets, protests, direct actions, that confidence and self-empowerment comes. And from that confidence and self-empowerment, we can begin the process of not alone defeating this round of cuts upon us, but actually starting to think about what type of new society we might like to build. So I think there's a huge, huge task ahead of us at the moment to build that campaign. In our workplaces, in our unions, in our communities, in our chats with our mates in the pub. Everywhere we go, this needs to be a discussion that has to involve every single person in terms of talking about how a campaign can be built, one that, as I said, we control from the bottom up. It's too important to leave to others, and it's really important that every single individual takes responsibility. The 13th of March should be seen as a possible beginning of a fight back. And I use the word possible because because of what it might do between this and then. But we should also remember that the 13th of March has been called as a national strike, not because ICTU wanted to do so, but because of serious pressure from below, because of the sort of stuff that has been happening in CBSU and in the teachers' unions, because of the people coming out on the streets 2 weeks ago. The ICTU leadership has been forced into a position of having had to call that day. So now it's up to us to build a campaign that will force them to use it. And the momentum that has come from that needs to continue to be built on. If the 30th of March goes ahead, it could change the political landscape forever. It could well have a massive impact on where things go in this country. For the first time in a long time, for the first time ever in most workers' lives, we will see our potential power. We can close down every single workplace in the country. We can close the place down, but we give trade unions and workers a sense of our power. It will provide a fantastic platform on which we can build the rest of the fight back. If the 30th of March does not go ahead, we need to use the mandate that the unions will have from the ballots that we take from industrial action, to use that anger and sense of betrayal that people will have by it being called off, to turn it into a campaign from below within the unions to force a national day of action very soon after the 30th of March if it doesn't go ahead on that day. We need to build a campaign that will build and will have a real national strike, and we need to build for a massive, I think we should start building now, for a massive show of strength on May Day this year. May Day should be turned into the organising the fight back day, which again everyone takes to the streets. It's May Day, it's on a Friday. Perhaps now is the time to put out the call that on Friday the 1st of May every single workplace should be shut down for people to go on May Day march. We need to develop that sort of campaign that will have that level of confidence that people would feel that they can move out of the sort of things that the limits that have been on our horizons to now. As I say, we need to build a massive campaign. It's not going to be easy. I do believe, however, that we have no choice. But the time is now for us, every single person, to stand, step up to the mark in terms of starting to build that campaign at a local level within our own workplaces and our own communities. Thank you.
Sorry, thanks very much. Just first of all, to introduce myself, my name is Dennis Keane. I am currently an executive member of the CBSU, the Civil Service Trade Union. And I'm very glad to be speaking here, as I'll speak at Anna on behalf of Frankie, to help try and move things forward. And at this stage, we need for all workers to start coming together. I'm going to raise some of the points that Gregor just raised later on as we go through this. But at any meeting I speak in, outside of my own workplace, to be honest, I actually have to start off now and explain who I am. Because from the level of mirage that we've seen in the media over the last period, every civil servant or public servant gets paid 80 grand a year, has 25 days holidays, doesn't do any work, all the rest. That's what you pick up from every media you pick up for the whole last game time. The reality is fundamentally different to that. The members that I represent are clerical officers and staff officers in the civil and public service. They started off at 24,000 per year, and after 18 years' service, they rose to 28,000. There's no guaranteed promotions, no guaranteed income at the top of that by any means. The other nonsense that we hear, and again, it touches into the main issues that have been happening in the public service as well, is these, of these Rolls Royce pensions that we all have. I want to explain again what that would mean for one of my own members, who, after, if they serve a full 40 years, they're entitled to full allocation of pension in the civil service. So if they're earning 28,000, they will get a pension of 19,000 per year. But they'll also be entitled, as all of them are entitled to, they'll also be entitled to state pension, which is a little over 28,000, about 28,200. So in reality, the Rolls Royce pensions our members will get will be about 5,800. It's a Rolls Royce pension I get having given 40 years service to the state. And that's the benefit. Now, if it was the case that our members were on 100 grand, 150 grand, they'd be on a very nice pension, thanks very much. But that is not the case for the vast, vast, vast majority of people in the public service. But what we've been trying to do on the CPSU for a whole period of time, I've been on the executive for the last 15 years, this stage, and we've been trying to build an access group, which we've had certain successes in for a whole period of time. And basically, understanding, again, making some of the points of records meant, we have no trust in our trade unions, be it in our internal union or externally linked to the trade service. And we've been all trying to build a group, which we've had some success in over a period of time, to build an alternative leadership in reality in the union. And the basic tenets that we put forward in that is obviously defence of the public sector. That is a very real need for the public sector in Ireland and elsewhere. And obviously linked to that is the idea of opposition to privatisation. We also, as part of that, have opposed every national wage agreement. We've opposed for two reasons. One for what points have been raised in relation to that we haven't got a share of this. In reality, we can't employ our workers by no means have a share of any of these deals, our percentage choice. But also, it's the absolute and utter nonsense to suggest that workers are partners with the bosses, with the government, and that way. What we're seeing very clearly over the last period is, in reality, there are two partners in Ireland. They're called IBEC and they're called governments, who are putting a boot into workers at this stage and are trying to pass off the blame for the robbery that's happened in Ireland for a whole period of time over the last while by some of the IBEC members and other people at this stage. I just want to make a brief point because, again, it's important. Just, again, I'm a member of Social Credit and an active member of Social Credit for a whole period of time. But I've worked a lot of times on different campaigns with members of the WSM. Because there's a lot more here that unites us than doesn't unite us, but there are some differences. And we're quite open about that. That doesn't stop us getting involved in campaigns and working together for national wage agreements, things along those lines. For me as a trade unionist, what I do, and the sort of tenets that I stand by, is that I want to reclaim the trade union movement. I have no trust in trade unions out there at the moment. But I'm not talking about simply replacing them. I'm not saying that we want to replace David Begg by another, you know, and that sort of thing. It's about reclaiming the movement from the ground out upwards. By having a trade union movement that the members actually believe is theirs, that they have a say in, that they organise, that they're part of. I believe trade union leaders should be elected, that they should be paid the average wage of the people that they represent. And I believe they should be absolutely a right of recall by the membership. If a trade union leader does things that the members don't do, the members should have a right of recall. And they're the basic tenets that I stand over that I organise during the trade union movement. But really why we're here today is to talk about the fight and what's going to happen at this stage. And I think, to be honest, if you look right around at this stage, most, more or less, the private sector, I think, has to say that there's been real attacks and real issues so far. There's been job losses, there's been pay cuts, there's been all these things. In general, though, I think you would have to say there's been more of a stunning effect on the private sector, with the very, very, very honourable exception of Warford Glass. And again, obviously, it's important that people are down there building the meeting site, but it's quite exceptional what these people have done, and they deserve a round of applause and everything about what they've done and what they're continuing to do. So this is not unique by any manner of means. This is a signpost of what will happen more and more and more in those areas. Because workers will have to struggle. It's not a question of will they struggle. Workers have to struggle to keep the heads above water at this point. But where we are seeing more of a bit of an organised way back to this point is the public sector. But it's no mistake either that the most organised attack has been on the public sector. Because the public sector in Ireland is the unionised public sector. It is the area where the trade unions are most organised, have the most members, etc. and all those things. And what we've seen is an attack to us called a pension levy. In reality, it's a pay cut. And it's nothing that do with pensions. For the very reason it is that we're on with pensions of our members. In reality, our members will be vastly overpaying their pension if they were 40 years or 7. There's nothing directly that do with that whatsoever. In the CPSU, we knew we had to take action. And we knew the movement was there. But we also knew that if we didn't move ourselves, the other trade union leaders, from points of raised, weren't going to move. And luckily enough, to a point, it helped their case. We had the ridiculous announcement, frankly, from Impacts just before Valentine's Day, that their action was to go, was on Valentine's Day, to go and visit the politicians' different lobbies and That took action when Bluffs defeated Inchinnery by 90 men or means. We understood it had to be a serious action that had to be organised in our union, but also it went across all the different areas. I represent 14,000 members through the Civil Police Service, out of 360,000 police service. We need the whole police service unit to come together, not just one unit on its own. One unit on its own will be isolated and we'll be leaving in this. United, we have a chance of actually winning this and coming together. We did two things. We organised a protest on the 18th of February. We did that for two reasons. A, for our members to show the anger that was there, but also for people of attraction for other public sector workers to come out and to generate a move to other public sector unions as well. We've got 3,500 members in Dublin. Over 4,000 people attended a demonstration at a bunch of protest on the 18th. Very successful, but we also know that there's quite a number from other units. When I said we've got members in Dublin, we've got members who work in Balbriggan, in Quintale, in all the different areas who couldn't make it in for a lunchtime meeting. So we do know there's workers there in the other areas. And part of this action was to try and build up a momentum in all the different other units as well and put pressure on those units. And I think that we've had a certain effect on that over the last period. But our main action that we started off was that we had a one-day strike last Thursday on the 26th. And, towards the week. Now, what we did there again was we knew we had to take serious action and that we couldn't, you know, just barely raise enough such this was not going to be enough. We went to our members with the ballots and our members came back with an 83% vote for action and, more importantly, frankly, on a turnout of 86%. That is an unheard of turnout, frankly, for the ballots, particularly run over 1 week, over a big period of time. Such was the anger at this stage. We had pickets right around the country, all different areas. There was a certain fear when we started out here, some of our members going, well, if we go to picket line, after all the barrage and all the attacks that we've seen this stage, are we necessarily going to get, you know, attacked by people in the street going, you have a job for life, you have a good thing, you know, it's easy off you, what are you doing in the street, blah, blah, blah. Just wasn't the case. The report back on the picket line was very solid. And that, where there were some people coming up, which I was semi-raising points, once people gave me a leaflet discussing them, people went, yeah, fair enough. You're not the people that were going after any of our means, and everyone should have a decent wage, a decent pension, and all of those points. So I think that our actions in the CSU have been successful to a point at this stage. We have pressure on some other unions. For example, our nearest union is the PSC union, which represents sort of the force line management and the sort of executive grades and civil service. They voted by 71% for action. I've no doubt that was because of the action relief fund as a signpost towards that. Unfortunately, what they and other unions have done have all leaned into Marshall Fridays. To us, that's a bit of a mistake because A, you're putting something off for nearly a month from it will happen, first of all, you're losing certain momentum. And for the points of regular also raised, we cannot be certain that Marshall Fridays will come off because no one will trade in leaves that are going to leave the table. If they're given a sniff at all, they will pull this and they will go into talks of whatever stage. We do not support the idea of the social side effects because what it is a social partnership. It will not be an answer for workers in any way, shape, or form. We also absolutely reject the comments made by David Begg last week that IGTU aren't actually opposed to pension levy, they just want to get it offers. In reality, what these people are now saying is they would accept a pay cut for their workers if they're now back around the table at the top. It's utterly unacceptable and cannot be allowed to happen in any way, shape, or form. Well, these points are going on, and I agree with the points of Brian's raised. That things have changed, to be honest. You know, what we're now talking about is vastly different to a meeting that we had last November. Like it's a million miles away. The idea, frankly, even last summer, of talking about nationalisations, of all these things, was just not on the agenda. Now it's on every TV you go to. What does that mean? And then when I talk about nationalisations, I don't talk about what's currently happening to governments, where they're just giving bailouts to their friends. What actually really wasn't held on the table is the idea of actually reclaiming and taking some of these things back. For example, the idea of nationalism with war for class is now on the table. It's now really open to civil society. And we just left to why you have to keep up that issue. But what's happened at this stage, and I want to finish on these points, is that the attacks are coming faster and faster. I believe it's a very organised attack in relation to the public sector. And I also think it's an ideological attack. Because people like Boybeck sit back thinking, if this plays out the way we want, we can get our grubby little mitts on the public sector. We can get privatised, make massive profits out, and that's their end agenda to try and be doing this. But it's also part of the race to the bottom. Because for these employers, they don't like the public sector for the very reason the public sector has, you know, not brilliant, but they've got better pay levels than the public sector, and they want to minimise the public sector and bring it down to their level, rather than the other way around. Brian Cowan, in his comments that he made a couple of weeks ago in his so-called State Nation address, one of the few honest things he actually said was that Ireland now doesn't have control of the currency, we can't devalue it, so it would have happened previously in the recessions at that stage. So basically, workers have to pay for this. And he used a figure of 12% of workers will have to lose over the next period of time. Show onto that pension goods, or show onto that tax rises, and things like those ones. What's very clear from the employers, from trading, and from the government stage, is the attacks are coming straight at the unions, question is now, what do the unions do? Do like as the current leadership would do, roll over and just accept it and hope it goes away. This will not go away. Question now is the movement standing up. It's about getting organised from grassroots, putting that pressure on. We have a rotten leadership and training movement at the moment, which we need to get rid of. But frankly, if we build that mood and it comes from the bottom, we will wipe those away. They will not be able to stop it. The mood is there. That's our job. CPSU and every other union, we need to do that. The last point I'm making is kind of regret is again, I've made most special comments in relation to the public sector. And obviously that's where I am organised and where I work and all those points. But we have to get over this idea of it anyway. There's a difference between the public and private sector. We're all workers, we're all under attack. The establishment in this country has been very clear about trying to avoid it. And if you actually talk to people in the public about the rest, that has been ingrained to a certain point. You know, to a certain point for people in the private sector, the public sector have it easy, blah blah blah. If you talk to them though, you can get over those points. We have to deal with this. The establishment can now attempt to draw the line down there. They want to build the public sector and then they'll move into the private sector. I have no doubt about that. It's not a question of that they just want to do the public sector. This is attacking all workers. We need now to stand up. All organisations need to come together and defend our workers and our places.
How's it going? I'm Julian Brophy. I'm good for education for everyone, so I'm mainly going to be speaking about it from a student perspective. Before directly addressing the question of how can we defeat fees and private cutbacks, I can't help but to start with a brief but personal account of my experience within fee. I attended a meeting on the issue about fees back in September, where we then decided that the matter was of such great concern that a separate campaign was needed. A campaign that would be intent on fighting for what we believe to be a right. A campaign that would directly fight against the harsh consequences that such a proposal entails. From uneasy meetings with about 6 to 7 unfamiliar and unacquainted faces with no official name, to a group of national recognition that's held protests, staged numerous blockades, made ministers think twice before setting foot on our campuses, gained media recognition, spread to every corner of the nation, and in many cases done far more than USI or our student unions, we certainly have taken a leap down the dark road to fighting fees and fighting the cutbacks. I grew up in Italy, and I've only been living in Ireland for the past 2 years. Needless to say, I've come from one of the hotspots of student activism, and now live in a country where the tangibility of such a concrete threat seems to be of little concern for the average student. So what exactly is it that can be done to defeat fees and fight the cutbacks? I believe that mobilising the student body to fight this threat is our responsibility, but by no means am I proposing that fee be the sole group responsible for defeating this proposed reintroduction. This is obviously the role of USI and the student unions. I do think that these bodies have lacked the true coordination, organisation and awareness needed to build a mass movement of students who will mobilise as a united body, a movement that's ready to speak and act their anger. I'd like to distinguish these features as imperative in our battle against fees. Awareness in order to fully comprehend the gravity of our predicament. Bat O'Keefe is going to present a plan to Cabinet in April outlining the proposal for the reintroduction of fees and graduate tax. And obviously once this is done, our campaign will assume far more complex dimensions. Organisation in order to adopt a national strategy that's strong enough to ensure that free education won't be threatened, and the coordination to build a mass movement of students that will fight to defend our right to free education. In order to defeat fees, these three features are needed especially amongst the groups that have the same objective at heart. Fee have on numerous occasions reiterated the desire to work alongside USI and our unions, but due to the dogmatic restrictions within the organisations, the potential power of a mass student movement is being limited, and this is only detrimental to our causes. From Paris to Frankfurt to Rome, student movements fulfilled their goals by bringing epic numbers of students together, and these official bodies must strive to do so in tandem with such groups like FEE. It's essential that these representative bodies work alongside groups like FEE to defeat this proposed reintroduction. Time is obviously of the essence, and if we don't act immediately, then what today is a threat, tomorrow might be an imposition by few that limits the opportunities of many. The government's trying to take away what we believe to be a fundamental basis for a proactive society. Taking away a free educational system is a quick means to solve their current self-spawned crisis, but it's in the long run the beginning of a downward spiral, one that will obviously generate further disparity, stratification, and polarisation. I'm not going to go into the economic jibber-jabber. I'll save myself because I'm not great at it, and I'll save you guys too. There are certain strategies, however, that I think are necessary to build this sort of campaign. The work obviously begins in our local colleges. The local fee groups must keep focused and structured in order to continue the good work we're doing. Obviously it begins with meetings, good group interaction, and expands to trying to promote our campaign among the student bodies, turning students into activists who are passionate and dedicated to fighting fees and cutbacks. To reach a high degree of student involvement, we must change our communication tactics with students. We must strive to engage with them on a personal level, enabling them to understand just how damaging this threat would be if implemented. It goes without saying that any opportunities we get to target government ministers we will take. We must stage blockades and hold occupations when deemed necessary. These are essential forms of physical and mental resistance that will raise our profile within the media and around our campuses. They will also show the government that we're not quite as vulnerable and apathetic as they deem us to be. Through meaningful direct action, we must seek to empower the student body as a united entity. In UCD alone, we've prevented three ministers from coming to our campus and forced Lenin to lie down covered in the back of a service jeep because he was honestly scared senseless of the angry and numerous mass of students that had gathered. And sadly, that's the guy in charge of our economy. We must all continue spreading the information necessary on our campuses, turning students into activists, with the goal of building a mass grassroots movement that has the substance to beat fees and fight the cutbacks. We have to continue to stress that what we're seeking is a stable educational system devoid of threats and cutbacks, a system obviously that's massively invested in by the government and society through central progressive taxation. Another vital step in our battle against fees is to reach a higher degree of national organisation in order to put fee in the limelight as a united group who can coordinate on a nationwide scale. We had our first national conference in January where delegates came from around the country to share ideas on how to fight the cutbacks and organise nationally. It was great. As we've seen, our unions are disorganised and naive. They certainly have no concrete strategic plans to defeat fees. The exchange of ideas is obviously one of the first building blocks for purposeful action. With an elevated degree of national organisation, I'm sure that as a movement we'll gain greater notoriety, appeal more to the students across the country, and galvanise our opportunities needed for direct action. Defeating fees, however, is not something fee can do alone, sadly. It's not something that even the students in the third level system can do alone. To defeat fees, we have to build a social movement that gains recognition, respect, and support from other sectors of society. The student movement alone is one that can be discounted by the government. They'll paint a radical and degenerate facade over us. But the government had no choice but to revert the MedCard policy, because the pensioners are obviously a social group who has everyone's support. We have to aim at building a sort of historic block, if you will, that ties in with all the groups within society, so that the student movement is espoused and therefore cannot be an ignorable social force. This again starts on our campuses. The prospect of fees and cutbacks are highly detrimental to workers, so it's essential to gain their support so that workers and students can unite and fight these cutbacks together. We have to exchange ideas with the different unions around the country and offer support to them when needed. And it's obviously essential to work with secondary school students, as they will be the first ones to pay for the shocking proposal. But I think that with the support of workers and the National Youth Council, third-level students could have what it takes to defeat fees. If we act intelligently, and most and importantly, immediately, we'll be able to generate a tidal wave of social forces that crashes down on the government and drowns their unjust proposals for good. We've now reached perhaps the most difficult point in our campaign, and I think we have to respond passionately. From now, our aim should be to build a mood that escalates every day, that involves as many as possible, and that is synonymous with anger, action, and change. We'll now more than ever make our voices heard and our actions felt. We will spread the ideas to all campuses across the country, sparking the desire for change among all students and student bodies in Ireland. Our protests and days of action have to grow and become more momentous. I want to see us reach a point where we've galvanized the dormant energy throughout our campuses and used it to build a movement of mass disobedience that is ungovernable. We've organized a referendum which calls for a one-day shutdown of our college in conjunction with the trade unions. It got passed by a vast majority, which is a great sign, especially in tough times like these where apathy among the student movement is quite immense. But hopefully USI will hop on and call for a national shutdown of the colleges in Ireland. They won't listen to 15,000 students, but I think they might just have to listen to 200,000. This is the kind of movement that I want to see built, one that's going to shut down all our colleges across the country and perhaps even larger sections of society. And it has to be one that continually threatens the stability that the state nurtures so much. That's what I believe in, and he's been doing a great job to fight these cutbacks. So, cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julian. We'll take any comments or questions now, and Samir has a microphone which
he'll
bring around to anybody who wants to speak.
I'm a member of WSM. I'm also a member of Unite. My name is Dermot, and I'm in the MAM section of the Unite Union. I address the issue of how we're going to win, which is a question I put forward to Jimmy Kelly, right? The day before the march of 120,000 people. And Jimmy Kelly addressed me in his dulcet Waterford tones and explained to me that Unite the Union has organised this one day of action, this 30th of March. And immediately when I heard about it, immediately I went, that's really convenient. I wonder what can happen in the time between the march that they're organising on Saturday and a month hence. It immediately struck me as the longer you leave it, the more likely it is that the unions, or the union leadership, let me be clear on this, are the only ones who are really desperate to get back around the table anymore. And I think that that's really immensely frustrating for everybody concerned, because I think that there is, what Ashanti said, there is this moment in time, and until we actually get to a stage where we actually cut the union leadership away from the unions and we reclaim the unions, then we're at a lost job, and I think that's the really crucial part. So one of the things that I didn't think we could get to decide today is one of the actions that we wanted to come out of this was to organise another meeting, a follow-up meeting, which would deal with the nitty-gritty of actually, if you're in a union, how do you organise to make sure that the ballot happens? How do you make sure that you're actually shutting down the job for that day? If you're also in that union and the union leadership is asking you to cross picket lines, how do you practically go about that so that people go on solidarity pickets and they don't cross picket lines? The real nitty-gritty. So that meeting is on Tuesday night in the Teachers Club at 7:30, and that will deal with the very, very specific instances. But also, I think it's about, and I think it was very clear from the platform, that there needs to be a unity of energy. We can't forget that there's 350,000. There is an army of unemployed people out there. If we're making the links about workers, private and public, whatever it might be, we also have to build the links with the students. We have to build the links with an army. If we have 350,000 people on the streets, and we have the unions as well, and we have the students of 200,000, then you do create a situation where it's ungovernable. But you also create a situation where the union leadership can kiss goodbye, and we don't have to pay to use Sikdu at Sikdu's Great Liberty Hall anymore. We actually come in and own it, and that's what we should be doing about the whole thing. We should be shutting down the country, and we should be shutting down places where they're desperate to get in and have their bellies tickled, and they deal with fucking the government and everything else. So sorry, I just got carried away there.
Well, I think that everyone here would agree that a central task facing us is the need to organise separately from the trade union bureaucracy, and that's clear from the top table. Ideally, I think that we'd be setting up committees of action that organise for the 30th of March. There are a couple of strategic problems which face the workers' movement trying to get a general strike. One is the large number unemployed and getting out and mobilising them. The trade union bureaucracy is not going to do that. To the extent that it's done, it will have to be done by rank and file activists. Also, there's the question that only 30% of the workforce is unionised. What about the 70% who are ununionised, non-unionised? I think that that's a strategic task for the rank and file as well. To the extent that such 30th of March committees were able to mobilise non-unionised workers to come out on strike, that would pose the question of a unionisation drive, which I think is going to be necessary in the coming period. There's also the question, to the extent that that was successful, but that would pose the picket line question. Something about the CPSU strike was the fact that picket lines didn't mean cross. The union said, cross our picket lines. All the other unions said, cross the picket lines. Some individuals did that, and individuals, some workplaces, people did that as groups. But that idea that picket lines mean don't cross is something that we're going to have to win the trade union movement to recognise. The ICTU has a terrible, this terrible policy paper I downloaded from the website where they make this, of all these bureaucratic hoops you've got to jump to get these all-out union pickets. And even those, even within those rules, they encourage people to cross picket lines. So I think that's a very important thing that the movement has to take on. Unfortunately, we don't have these 30th of March action committees. I think think the suggestion from the WSM speaker of trying to turn May Day into a day of action is important, but I think that we need to start organising for that now, trying to build committees for May Day, committees of action for May Day, something like that, as a very concrete expression. And I think that not only as a perspective for the best way to try and defeat these current attacks, but also as a strategic perspective towards the future and a new society, we'll be out of these little shoots that we can build in action committees, strike committees. These are going to point the way towards the need for network of strike committees, flying picket committees, defensive occupations, which we hope will spread on the Waterford example. That poses the question for workers' councils. That poses the question of who rules the society. Just the final point on the question of nationalisations as a demand. I'm a bit unsure about raising that as a demand by itself, as some on the left do. We've seen the nationalisation of Anglo-Irish, which was a terrible nationalisation. We've just taken on the debt, which is going to be part of the taxation hike they're going to give us. I think that if we raise the demand for nationalisations, that's got to be in the context of raising the demand for expropriating bosses and for ending their political rule. Nationalisations, for us, only make sense if we're running society.
I'm glad to see I'm not the only one who's a bit worried that a Congress executive will try and call off March the 13th. Sometimes I feel like am I just being overly pessimistic? No, okay, I'm not. And it's not just those of us in this room. I remember SIP2, my own branch committee had an emergency meeting there a couple of nights ago, and because of that fear, it was unanimously decided that when we begin balloting our members' education sector on Monday, as well as the official ballots from Liberty Hall, the branch will also be balloting people for industrial action, specifically on the so-called pensions levy, so that if Begg and Murphy and McLoone and the rest of those massively overpaid clowns find an excuse to crawl back into government rooms in the hope of a tidbit from Cowan's table, that at the very least we'll be able to say, well look, our 3,000 members are not happy with this, they have voted for action until that levy is withdrawn completely and in total. Hopefully, I know time is short, but hopefully that example could be taken up in at least a few other unions and we get this momentum going, which brings us back to not only how do we win, but making the point, these are our unions, and it's time we got rid of that bureaucratic layer at the top, which essentially now has almost forgotten why it started off there. They don't seem to see their role in any way, even in the most cautious and conservative way, as defending their members, but rather just how can they maintain social peace, how can they uphold the status quo. I think a really good turnout on March the 30th would be one hell of a step in shaking things up.
My name's Sean Dunn. I'm not a member of any organisation, political or otherwise. I'm a fourth year student at Trinity. I had a question for the representative from UCD. It's just when you're talking about student apathy. It's what I've noticed in my 4 years in college. It's not so much an inability to act. For instance, let's say this year, the fourth year group, I think we had a problem. We were losing some services within our faculty. We were able to organise very quickly and act on that and actually, you know, save the said service. So this is without the input of the students' union. Now, these same students, you know, 30, 40 students who the second is something that they can see on the ground, that they might, it might disappear. We all acted very, very quickly. However, when it came to the protest against fees, people immediately said, all of us is almost unanimous. None of us are looking for fees to come back. We've known, you know, everyone is against it. But they still have this thing that we go out on the street, nothing's going to happen. And it's just, I can see in UCD more has been happening. And I was wondering what you have done to kind of, or if you have any ideas on how to end the kind of disconnect. It's not that people feel completely useless or that they can't get anything done. We know we can get things done. It's just that when it comes from transferring our energy from, you know, a very small level within the faculty to something more global as such, I just think.
Yeah, it's been pretty tough. I mean, as a fee, we started off as a very small group, and kind of galvanizing whatever energy we could was very difficult. I mean, getting people onto the protests on campus for the blockades, the ministers, you know, you do so much work to push for it, and you only get maybe 100 or 200 showing up, 300 maybe at best, you know. And it's tough when you see about 20, 30 people putting everything they have into trying to build for that, you know. Another thing, it's just we, for Education for Everyone, we ran people in the elections in UCD. Myself, I ran for president. I lost. All three candidates actually lost. And the people that were elected, it was kind of a popularity race more than anything, you know. And they really, they were given, I mean, the students in UCD were given the chance. I'm not saying I'd be the greatest president, but they were given a chance. They were given three solid people that would have done a lot for to change UCD around, and they didn't take it, you know. We've been striving to engage with people on a far more personal level, you know, instead of just handing out leaflets and flyers, you know. I mean, you really do just have to stop the people and talk, give them time, talk to them. There's this huge thing about this threat, the fees. I mean, people go on the marches, but I mean, so many people that went on the marches kind of take it for granted that fees will probably be coming in, you know. So I don't know, we don't have much time. We've only got about a month and a bit, so whatever we need to do, it needs to be pretty serious from here until then. But there is, if you're interested in Trinity, there's a fee branch out there, so get involved and hopefully change things around a little.
I'll just add something to that, because I think it's a general question that's, you know, it's relevant not just to the student context, but to everybody, is that that sort of sense of disconnectedness that people might feel in terms of what's the point of going on a march, doesn't achieve anything. I mean, the actual reality is it doesn't achieve anything. What the march, for example, the 120,000, 150,000 people that were out in the streets 2 weeks ago, if that's all that happens, well then we might as well not have bothered. What that has done, though, has created an atmosphere in which people see that there are far more people that think the same way as they do. So then when you're putting forward the argument for, well, we need to take the next step, such as a national strike or whatever, you have immediate audience, you have that immediate block thing. I think what Fee has done particularly successfully, I mean, it's great when you hear someone say, no, only 200 people turned up on the blockade, we were disappointed, you know. But people like me that are involved in politics for the last 20 years, you know, that's, you know, what Fee have done over the last couple of months in turning, in getting a lot of people actively involved in doing the right actions, is massive, because what they've done is successfully done some stuff where people have seen immediate success, and that has given people the confidence, I think, to take that next step. So, like, for example, when the medical card issue, when the over 70s medical card thing was overturned so quickly, it gave everybody in that week or two around that time, everybody said, well, that's the way to show the government what to do, you know. And so it's that thing of trying to show people by example of successful actions that, you know, even if they're small things. So even stuff like your own case, where you talk about maybe 30, 40 people haven't come together and achieved something. Probably nobody else in Trinity even knows that happened. So spreading the word about it and successful stuff like that is important in terms of giving people the feeling of confidence that they can actually do something about these issues.
Hi there, my name is Keith Kearns, was involved in various different stuff, been out of the country for a while, but there's some 3 points to make. The first one is fees can be better. I mean, fees were better than 7 years ago when I was in college. I was involved in anti-fee stuff, and that's actually how I got politicised in the first place. Fees, and then it was very different in that it was the boom in the Celtic Tiger, that people were feeling a lot more financially comfortable, and I think a lot of the fee stuff is breaking it down to make it relevant to what you were saying. The reality is, if you're paying tuition fees next year, it's the money's not going to the college. The government has been open about that. The college authorities are very aware and are open about it. You've had UCD presidents arguing for fees to come back for years, and now we're saying, oh, well, actually, we're not going to get any of that money. And what that money is doing is, the people who are going into college now are kids coming out at the end of school, young adults, whose parents are now dealing with pay cuts and layoffs, having not the money to be paying for it, and workers who've been laid off themselves, trying to go back into education because ours is an information economy, as we're constantly being told, and yet upskilled, and they're now after being laid off on the dole, and now being told, oh, they're actually going to have to pay fees to go and get upskilled, which is obviously brain dead. And the reality is, all those people are being asked to pay thousands of euro a year to pay off millionaires' bank loans that they're not prepared to pay back off themselves. In terms of the question of, and in terms of the fee stuff, I just say, just step it up. Like, when we were involved in the fee stuff before, and there's 20 people in this room who were involved in it back then, on marches, you just take them over. Just take them over, do sit downs, shut down streets in Dublin City. You know, quite frankly, fuck you outside, don't do anything, or did do anything, just do it. Nationalisation, I was involved in Shell to Sea for a long time, still am briefly. It's very interesting for me, for someone who's involved in for a long time, to hear that we're taking nationalising AIB grant, right? We're all shitting ourselves because there's this budget coming out in the next month that has to cover back, take back 4 billion from somewhere, from our salaries, from our public services, from our health services. There's 54 billion euro minimum of gas out of the Carrick field, and that's by Shell's own accounts. It's expected that there's huge amounts more. We can nationalise banks that have fucked themselves up, but we can't nationalise our own gas that we gave away for free, which we're going to get 25% tax off, which they can put all their expenses against, and no royalties from it. No royalties whatsoever. So we can take over AIB, but we can't take over our own gas, which would cover all of our expenses and actually leave us with a minimum of 50 billion profit on it. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. And the last thing I want to say is, just from myself, I'm 24 years of age. I've never striked before, taken first to court before, but I've never striked before. I work in the not-for-profit sector. And I think the whole thing about striking is brilliant, all for it, but there's a huge number of people in my age group who've never done it before. And taking the step to say, I'm sorry, I'm leaving, particularly for people like myself that are involved in providing services that people actually need on a day-to-day basis. So if you're walking out and potentially leaving someone stuck, and your employer isn't actually screwing you because they work in the community sector, and walking out to say, no, hold on, I'm actually standing up to the whole system, I wouldn't underestimate how difficult that is for people. And that's kind of a gap in the fact that 70% of the workforce isn't unionised. Do you know what I mean? I think that's a big step, and we kind of need to recognise that and find ways to make that as easy as possible for people.
Yeah, like the finance figures. I think it echoed pretty much everyone's arguments about the actual need for civil disobedience at the moment. I think we're in a space and time that hasn't been around for generations. I think there's spaces to be made both within the workplace but also outside the workplace. For me, I'm 34 now. I work in a series of shit jobs, mostly ununionised since the age of 19. For me, I recognise and see the genuine validity in workers' powers through strikes. But I don't think we should be striking just to get a higher wage. I don't think we should be striking just solely so that our terms and conditions are slightly better. Because when we solely define ourselves as merely workers, rather than human beings with a genuine desire to control society democratically, that's where the deal's at. And this is what, for me, I think that's what we need to be arguing for now. Not just tinkering around and making things a little bit better. Because you can't tinker with exploitation. You can't tinker with 1 billion human beings starving on the planet. You can't tinker with that stuff. And it's about trying to voice our ways and our anger as workers, but also as human beings. And that another way is possible and is plausible. I think in terms of civil disobedience outside the workplace, there's a call for shutting down the banks on the 1st of April. Some people are going to take to the streets, they're going to go into the banks, and they're going to ask for a money back. Simple as that. It's not going to be argy-bargy, we're not going to hassle the bank staff, but we're going to shut them down. And it's symbolic, but it shows that people can take power, both within the workplace and outside the workplace. On the same day, I'm not sure, but I think they're actually going to announce this mini budget, this complete hatch job, on the 1st of April as well. So I recommend that people take to the streets that evening as well, outside the Department of Finance, and have a go. Show their discontent.
Hi, my name is Paul. I'm from Free Education for Everyone.
I didn't actually hear what you said about Sean. I'm pretty sure what he said. We started off with about 7 people in a room, and now we've got probably about 150 people nationwide. But yesterday, I think we all sort of realised that we've failed to work and win within the system. We've been obstructed by USI along the way. We've been obstructed by student unions across the country. And it was a failure of our policies, as well as an indictment to theirs, that we did try and work within the system. I think the time has come to realise that there's not going to be success by trying to get into the students' union. What's been made clear from listening to people around the room is that it's not separate struggles, it's one, and it's generally it's against the same enemy. And I think unless we unite to do it, we're definitely not going to beat fees. They're probably coming in April, so March 30th is our last hurrah. If we don't do something then, it's not going to work. And I think our only chance really is to broaden the struggle and to unite with the other workers. We missed our chance. The pensioners won because they wouldn't back down. We didn't capitalise on it. The students' union showed no solidarity with Waterford, Crystal, the bus workers. I think that's where they're failing. So I think on March the 30th, the students' fee annuals will be out there with you, but we need you to be out there with us as well. And just urge anyone who has any ideas, or is capable, or is in any place in the union that can come out on March 30th, help us to shut down the college and do what we can. Just please come along with us. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Bill. Middlesbrough Union stand for, I suppose, 50 years. I lived here the last session, and I lived through a bill previous to that in the 60s, and now I lived through another bill. And if I'm still alive in 5 years' time, I'll have lived through another session. I've always been involved in the trade union movement, and I'm satisfied that in the last 20 years the trade union movement has died. I say the social partnership killed the trade union movement, not the spirit of the rank and file, and the main bureaucrats of the trade union officials. Now, they are a pretty conservative bunch, to be quite frank and honest, even though they all come from medical youthful backgrounds. I actually thought it was the new. I'm 60, I see fellas in when I was 15, and they were going to tear them down, they were going to do wonders, they were going, they were shaping the chairman, they were shaping Tusk, they were shaping staff, and they were doing all sorts. And other ones sit on their ass, probably the one of them, I don't mention the names, is actually supporting the UK for her at the moment. Now, there is a section of the trade union movement that is dormant, but still in existence. And it's open for people to move into. And that's the trades councils. If you were to attend any of the trades council meetings, or the one in Dublin, if they have 20 people to move at it, that's all they have. There's trades councils all over Ireland. And I would advise young people to get involved in the trade union movement and get themselves onto the trades councils. Because the trades councils, I say this in the 80s, excuse me, I shouldn't put anything off. When there was no body in the trades councils, we went into the trades council in Dublin and say when I was in my 20s, and we organised, and we ended up with a million people on strike, on a one day strike, which wasn't declared as a one day strike either, it was only declared as a half day protest, and a million people walked around the street up on a taxi farm. Now we managed to get them on the street, but the leadership of the trade unions wouldn't have capitalised on that and build on it. But leaving that aside, I do think that if it's moved into the trades councils now, and all trades councils are all the country, and they don't have people there, but if you can go into your trade union and say, who represents us on the trades council? They'll probably say, no, wait, we're not prepared to do it. Then you go to the trades council meetings. The trades councils have a history of being the workers' parliaments. They were the first. The Labour Party in England came over the trades councils. The trades councils were where working people, activists at the place of work, would assemble, would discuss the issues of the day, both national and international and local. And then they would take action. So I do think there is room for young people to get in there. We find it bold and everything else. But if a trades councils are the ones that's going to organise any demonstrations on the 12th of March. So therefore it's essential to get the right people in the trades councils at the right time to present the right things. So I do think it's an opportunity there for you to take up. Thank you.
This audio download is from the 2009 Dublin Anarchist Book Fair. It's from the session on the capitalist crisis, fighting back, and features a member of the CPSU executive, a member of FEE, the Students Anti-Fees Campaign, and a member of the INTO. You can download more audio from www.wsm.ie.